pointing to the Messiah, the King, the one who was spoken of in times long ago. Isaiah speaks of the Messiah in many different passages, but this chapter, Isaiah chapter 11, is perhaps one of the most remarkable pictures we get of the Messiah to come. Sadly, this evening, we're just going to focus on Isaiah 11, 1 to 5. Hopefully, it will whet your appetite for the peace that the Messiah brings in the remaining verses. But let me this evening read Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 to 11. Let's hear God's word. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse, and a branch from his roots shall bear fruit. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by what his eyes see, or decide disputes by what his ears hear. But with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his waist, and faithfulness the belt of his loins. The wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the lion and the fatted calf together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the cobra, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the adder's den. They shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. In that day, the root of Jesse, who shall stand as a signal for the peoples, of him shall the nations inquire, and his resting place shall be glorious. In that day, the Lord will extend his hand yet a second time to recover the remnant that remains of his people from Assyria, from Egypt, from Pathros, from Cush, from Elam, from Shinar, from Hamath, and from the coastlands of the sea. And as I said, we'll be spending our time now just focusing on these first five verses. As Isaiah peers into the future and sees a vision of the coming Messiah. Now, I don't know whether you've had Christmas trees up this festive season. Ours went up very early. We had an excited three-year-old when we put it up. Sadly, it didn't rival the Christmas tree that goes up outside the Rockefeller Center every year. Apparently, the Christmas tree outside the Rockefeller Center is decorated with 30,000 LED lights every year. And on top of the Christmas tree is placed a Swarovski crystal weighing in at 250 kilograms. Now, I can't even pronounce the crystal's name, so there's no chance of Emma getting anywhere near one of those. But isn't it fascinating that we spend so much on decorating something that is essentially dead? You see, as soon as we chop a Christmas tree down, it begins the slow process of dying. However much you dress it up and make it look fancy, it's only heading in one direction. And that's the start of our passage this evening. Isaiah 10 and 11 is actually saying to us this evening, as he looks into the future, before he sees the Messiah, Isaiah sees a stump. He's saying to us this evening, Boris Johnson is like a Christmas tree. Dress him up however you want, whether it's tinsel on a Zoom Christmas quiz. Boris Johnson and any human leader is only heading in one direction. Did you notice at the start of Isaiah 11, in verse 1, he looks ahead and what he sees is a stump. And out of that stump will come forth a shoot. In chapter 10, he's been speaking about the superpower of the day, Assyria. And he says at the end of chapter 10, Assyria will be reduced to a stump. But before God's people got too comfortable, he turns the focus on them and says, no, you too, Judah, will be reduced to a stump. Why is Isaiah saying that to us this evening? He's telling us this: there is a redundancy in all human leadership. If you're ever tempted to look for answers in political advancement or economic prosperity or educational success, think again, Isaiah is saying. All of those efforts are dead ends, a stump. As we come to the end of the Christmas season tells us this. Only God can fix the mess of this world. There is a redundancy in all human leaders. But we know that, don't we? And so Isaiah wants us to turn the focus on our own hearts. There is a redundancy in every human heart. Only God can break in and fix the mess of this world. We're at that time of year where we're about to make New Year's resolutions. And isn't it tempting, as we look back on the year that's been and look ahead to the year that's about to come, for us to look inwards and to devise self-salvation projects, to come up with ways in which we might bless God in this coming year? Isaiah is saying, there is a redundancy in every human heart. Give up on self-salvation projects and allow the light of the Messiah to shine into 2022. Only God can fix the mess of this broken world, and praise God, he did it. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse. As you've been reading the Christmas narratives, you'll have remembered once again that it comes in unexpected places, doesn't it? A poor pregnant teenager in Palestine, surrounded by animals and attended by shepherds. That very first Christmas, God's work looked insignificant. And even as Isaiah looked forward, initially, it looked insignificant, a shoot. Notice how Isaiah doesn't even mention David here. He could have made it sound better. Great David. But he says a shoot from the stump of Jesse. Jesse who died in relative obscurity. But that's the point. There is a redundancy in every human heart, but out of death, God brings life. God's final word is always one of new life, a shoot in the face of death, a stump. At a time when the nation looked pathetic and powerless, in the days that Jesus came, a little baby was born, no room in the inn, so he was placed in a stable. And yet look what came from that stable. But Isaiah 11 presents to us the mystery of Christmas. Isaiah 11 verse 1, there shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse. But did you notice in verse 10? In that day, the root of Jesse, who shall stand as a signal for the peoples, of him shall the nations inquire, and his resting place shall be glorious. He comes from Jesse, and yet he came before Jesse. It's like John the Baptist said it. After me comes one who was before me. And we hear that so often that we don't think anything of it. But can I tell you, that's weird. That's strange. What on earth is going on? After me comes one who was before me. But here's the point. Jesus came in time and space, and yet he was the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He occupied a real corner of history, and yet he was the Ancient of Days. He lived under the stars, and yet he flung them into space. No wonder he divides history. After me comes one who is before me. It's the mystery of Christmas. But what it is the Ancient of Days breaking into this world to fix it. Because no one else and nothing else could. So that's what Isaiah sees. He looks forward and he sees the coming of the Messiah into the world. And what will he be like? That's what I want to spend our time focusing on this evening. Verse 2 and 3. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him. The Spirit of wisdom and understanding. The Spirit of counsel and might. The Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord. Here is our triune God. The Father sending his Son into the world and filling him with his Spirit so that he could live in this way. I'm sure we've been confronted in the past number of weeks as we've read the news, not only of the moral bankruptcy of our leaders, but also of their incompetence and inability. Haven't we seen that? Even if they wanted to do the right thing, I'm not sure they could. And yet Isaiah looks forward and he sees Jesus eminently trustworthy, eminently powerful. There's a sense in which, as Isaiah reels off these characteristics of the Messiah, these seven characteristics, he's saying to his original readers and to us, all that was lacking in God's people is found abundantly in Jesus. In many ways, it's as if these seven qualities mirror the seven woes of Isaiah chapter 5. Isaiah chapter 5 and 6 pronounce seven woes upon the people of God. They failed. And Isaiah is saying now in Isaiah 11, where we fail, Jesus always succeeds. Where we feel let down, Jesus will never, ever let us down. When Jesus was on earth, he was the man equipped fully with the Spirit. And here's what it brought about in his life. He had the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of knowledge. This Jesus we worship is full of wisdom. The decisions he makes and actions he takes are consistent, caring, effective, and meaningful. But it's more than just doing the right thing here. There's an intimacy in this language that Isaiah uses. He knows us. This evening, Jesus can read your heart. He knows everything about you. No pretense can pull the wool over his eyes. But this is beautiful for us this evening. You see, we live in a world where relationships hinge on hiding things. And Jesus comes to us and he says, I know you fully, and yet I love you unconditionally. I don't know how the last 18 months have affected you, but the isolation and loneliness can often provoke a sense of being on your own, a sense that no one truly understands you. No one knows what's going on. Can I tell you this evening, Jesus Christ is understanding in the flesh. He knows you. He loves you. He's the Spirit of counsel. He has the Spirit of counsel. Can I ask you this evening, will you allow Jesus to be your guide in the darkness? Isaiah is writing to a people who were consulting mediums and spiritists in chapter 8. In 2022, where will your hearts turn when you need advice and comfort? Will you turn to the wonderful counselor who shines light into the confusion of our lives and shows us the way, the truth, and the life? He had the Spirit of counsel. He had the Spirit of might. Now I know we probably don't fall into this trap, but so many people think of Jesus as nice, but ineffective. Can I say Isaiah 11 and the rest of the Bible shows us the opposite? He is the light of the world who hung the stars in the sky. He's the one who calmed the storm with a word, healed the sick and oppressed, and opened the eyes of the blind. People think Jesus is nice but ineffective. He's the opposite of that. This baby at Christmas has the power that we need. He's the mighty God who shines light into the darkness and says, rest your weakness on him and find in him your strength. This is the Jesus that Isaiah saw. This is the Jesus who is accessible to us by his Spirit as we open the pages of the New Testament and read about him. Do you feel afraid? Sit with his disciples in the boat as he calms the storm. Do you feel loss and devastation and bereavement? Stand with him by the tomb of his friend as he weeps. Do you feel doubt and anxiety? Get on your knees beside the man who said, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. In every situation we see Jesus in the Gospels, he is available to us. But Isaiah 11 presents us with a challenge. Will you choose the stump or the shoot? Some of the commentators say that the translation, his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord, could be translated, he will sound out the fear of the Lord in others. That is, he will provoke a sense of the fear of the Lord. As we look at Jesus this evening, as you think about our glorious triune God in this coming year, it must change us. Because this Jesus who came didn't just come to be nice and ineffective. He came to save his people from their sins. He doesn't just divide history. He divides humanity. The Russian novelist Alexander Solzhenitsyn said this as he spent time in prison. He said, gradually it was disclosed to me that the line separating good and evil passes not through states, nor between classes, nor between political parties either, but right through every human heart. Jesus came into that world, a world that was broken, and he came to save his people from their sins and to judge his enemies. Isaiah 11 tells us that he shall not judge by what his eyes see or decide disputes by what his eyes hear, but with righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall kill the wicked. Again, we're probably used to this, aren't we? But can I say we're in a minority? We read these verses and think that makes sense. But for many people, these words are unsettling. And we need to be prepared to answer people who find these words unsettling. The thought of Jesus blowing people over to their death. Can I tell you, Jesus coming to judge is good news for us this evening. And it's good news for those that find it unsettling because, well, for a number of reasons. Firstly, this, the alternative is far worse. If Jesus doesn't come and judge, then all we have is scientific determinism. Here's one of the four horsemen. He's not as popular now, but this is an idea that is popular. Sam Harris, he says, the idea that we, as conscious beings, are deeply responsible for the character of our mental lives and subsequent behavior is simply impossible to map onto reality. Isn't that nonsense, though? If that was true, doesn't that just leave us all open to exploitation? If ultimately people can't help themselves, then we have no say over what they do to us or others. It is just c'est la vie. And no one wants to live in a world like that. What we need to remind ourselves and what we need to say to others is that you cannot extract the hook of evil from humanity without some barbs still digging in. There is a rottenness to our core, a cancer that must be overcome. Life on this earth is not the way things ought to be. And either we can accept that as the status quo, or we can look to the one who will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth and destroy wickedness with the breath of his lips. It is good news that Jesus will do this. The mess and rottenness and destruction of this world of sin will not outlast this Jesus. It is good news. The untold suffering of millions won't go untold forever. It is good news because the pain that we see on our news and the pain that we feel in our hearts won't continue ad infinitum. It's good news. But Isaiah gives us two other reasons why it's good news. It's good news that Jesus will come as judge because he is completely fair. He shall not judge by what his eyes see or decide disputes by what his ears hear. It's true in this world, isn't it, that opinions are formed by what our eyes see and our ears hear. That's why all of politics is basically spin. And even we fall into that trap, don't we? Often the first thing we hear is the thing that we believe. But as Christians, we can come to God and say, I don't have all the pieces. I don't see everything. But God is able to distinguish between appearance and reality. There's no pulling the wool over his eyes. He is fair. His judgment goes beyond the apparent truth of the matter. I was looking up some newspaper headlines from the 30th of January 2020 just to show how the same event can be seen in profoundly different ways. This is the Daily Mail on the 31st of January 2020. A new dawn for Britain. The Guardian, the biggest gamble in a generation. The Sun, our time has come. The Express, yes, we did. The Financial Times, Britain bows out of the EU with a mixture of optimism and regret. Pithy and snappy as ever. Interestingly, the Daily Mirror actually on that day was about the only one that got it right. This was the Daily Mirror's heading. Killer flu, 150 Brits in quarantine. Now, I'm not going to weigh in on any of those political debates, but can you see the same event seen in so many different ways? How on earth can we look at situations and see things clearly, see things perfectly? But Isaiah says, no, this Messiah, he will not judge by what his eyes see or decide disputes by what his ears hear. He sees everything perfectly and acts in accordance with his perfect nature. And so Isaiah can say, righteousness shall be the belt of his waist and faithfulness the belt of his loins. It's like wherever you look, when you gaze upon Jesus, what you see is righteousness and faithfulness. He is always righteous. He is always faithful. No one will ever be able to point the finger at him and say that he's done something wrong, that he's acted out of character. He is completely fair in his justice. It's also good news because he acts on behalf of those who are never acted on behalf of. He acts on behalf of the needy. With righteousness he shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. The God of the Bible is a father to the orphan, a shelter for the homeless, a hiding place for the abused, an anchor in the storm. When Jesus was on earth and as he was going to leave his disciples, he said to them, I will not leave you as orphans. It's tempting at times, isn't it, to think, my life is so small and insignificant. My struggles are pretty hard for me, but no one else notices them. Is God too busy for me? Can I say to you this evening, he is never too busy. He's never too busy for you. Look at the people he visited that first Christmas. A teenage virgin, a carpenter from Nazareth, a couple struggling with infertility, shepherds under Bethlehem skies, traveling foreigners from the east, faithful saints in the temple. How many of those would you have visited? But he visited them all. Don't think he's too busy for you. He is for you. So as we finish, let me just apply these verses. Let me apply this picture of Jesus to us in three ways. Firstly, we need to learn to wait. Isaiah looked ahead and he saw a shoot from the stump of Jesse. And 700 years later, that shoot emerged. 700 years. Abraham and Sarah waited 20 years for the child of promise. Joseph was in prison for 13 years. The Israelites were in slavery for 430 years. King David was anointed as king when he was 13 years old and then waited and waited until he came to the throne. 2021's felt like a year of waiting for us, hasn't it? Waiting for press conferences, waiting for lockdowns to end, waiting for test results, waiting for some sense of normality, waiting for restoration, whatever it may have been. It has been a year of waiting. But maybe that's been a good thing for us. The Bible is full of waiting because our lives aren't governed by our stopwatches. God is in control. Jesus came at the right time. Even if for 700 years people read Isaiah 11 and thought, when? And then he did. God is in control, so trust his timing. However much your activities may seesaw back and forth, God is never caught off guard. He's never threatened by apparent chaos. He is in control. Isaiah saw this and it happened. He also saw verses 6 to 9. Can I tell you, it will happen. It will happen. We need to learn to wait because the work that God is doing in our lives is too important for quick fixes. If God has invested in your life, he's invested in it for the long run. And so we wait. And as we wait, don't trifle with this Jesus. He's glorious. He's powerful. And he will divide history. I think even as Christians, we can patronize Jesus. We can pay him lip service. And yet fail to be humbled by his majesty. There's no hiding from him. He sees you, and so give to him all that you are. Because here's my final application. Come to this Jesus again and again and again. Come to him. He sees you, and he holds his arms open wide to you. Abandon self-salvation projects and come to him. Again and again and again. And find in him that wisdom, that knowledge, that power, that counsel that you've been longing for. There really is nothing better than being a Christian. Because you can look into the darkness and see the light of the world. And that light will eventually extinguish all darkness, that darkness that you might feel creeping into your life, that darkness that seems to be your closest friend. It will be extinguished. And let me tell you how I know why. Let's just read verses 6 to 9 as we finish. The wolf shall dwell with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the lion and the fattened calf together. And a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the cobra, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the adder's den. They shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Just one final thing. When Jesus was on earth, in Mark's gospel, he tells us when he was tempted in the wilderness, he was with the wild animals. And you think, why is that detail there? because that's really the only time Jesus was going to encounter wild animals. Because when he comes again, they won't be wild. They will be lying down next to each other. There will be perfect peace, transformation, restoration, and rest. And we know that is waiting for us, because it's as if we stand between Isaiah 11 verse 4 and the rest of Isaiah 11. We've seen it, and the rest is coming.